about Chinuch, because after all,
that's what we're here for. So what have we seen so far? We've seen so far that there seems to be a mitzvah of Chinuch, which the Gemara labels as Drabanan, even though we probably are pretty sure that there is a mitzvah of Chinuch Man HaTorah, and we have to figure out exactly how those concepts interact with each other. But what we seem to be talking about is specifically a notion of having children of a certain age do mitzvos on a level midrabanan. And we saw that there was some tension. Tosfos in Yuma, Tosfos Shanim in Yuma, raises the question that how could it be that we have a sugya of katan ochel nevelus bez dinei mitzuvim lafrisho? And if you have a child who's eating non-kosher food, apparently Beis Din is not obligated to separate him from that. And whatever the maskana there is, just the whole discussion seems to exist in isolation from our discussion of chinuch in general. And the question was raised, how could that be? If you have to train children to do mitzvos, so then clearly you can't have them do avodos. And we saw a few answers, right? What were among the answers? Right, within the answer to Tos Hashanim, and there were others also, but within Tos Hashanim, what were the answers? Right. One answer was, sorry? Right, very interesting distinction. We have to try to see if we could understand that at all. And so let's put that on our agenda to try to understand. And the idea that maybe the obligation is only on the father, not Beis Din. So yes, it's conceivable that the father has to train the child in mitzvos, but Beis Din does not. So the Gemara was talking about Beis Din, of other ones, the Gemara will have to get to that too. And there it comes out that when we talk about the father, we're talking about the father specifically, even to the exclusion of who?
The mother.
Right? Which is surprising because of our Gemara. Our Gemara in Daf Gimel tells us that Hilni Malka could have been expected to make sure that her sons were sitting in a kosher sukkah, that even though she herself was exempt from sukkah. So the fact that she was sitting in a sukkah that didn't seem to comply halachically, okay, we could handle that. But she had seven sons, and seven sons who were of different ages. It's got to be that one of them at least is going to be chayav in chinuch. And therefore, since we also were told at the same time that she was makbid on all the din of the rabbanan, so presumably she was worried about this as well. So there, the Gemara tells us essentially Hilni Malka is involved in chinuch. So how could you explain that if it's only on the father? Now, the Tosfos is one answer, right? That maybe there was a father there somewhere. It doesn't work fantastically with the language of the Gemara. So that's another thing we want to figure out. What is the role of the mother? What does Yisrael want to ask? And how soon will we let him ask it? Those are three things that are right now on our mind. So let's do that in backwards order. We'll ask now, and then we'll find out what it is, and then we'll deal with the first question.
Right. Yes. Could it be that only applies regarding the mother, that she's not, I guess, chayav for chinuch when there is a father around to do it? Is there like such, in that case?
So it could be, almost, perhaps, possibly could be. Question is, what source pushes us in that direction? You know what I mean? Like that, what question will that answer for us?
I guess in that case, why in our case we're using Hilni Malka as I guess proof that women or mothers are obligated in a meaning?
Except that you're right. I mean, so then it'll explain maybe if there was no husband.
Yeah.
So then in our Gemara, yes. But then the question is, where do the other Gemaras even get their position from? We'll have to see how much, if that really helps or anything. Right. Part of what we throw into the mixture is you saw the Gemara in Maseches Nazir, on Daf Chavtes, where the Gemara says there, Haish Madras Beno Benozir, and not Hayusha. And there the Gemara says that that is Midin Chinuch, the father has a concept and the mother doesn't, at least according to Reish Lakish in the Gemara. It's a discussion whether we should pass him like that or not, but that adds to a little bit the confusion here. Alright, so we got to figure out how would it make sense to say Aseh as opposed to Los Aseh? Who should be Chayiv? Does it make sense to exclude the mother? How does that work out with Gemaras? But really, it's not even as much about the Gemara. Let's go back to that previous question. Like, why would you say that the mother should not be obligated in the chinuch of the child? Yes, sir?
It might not be so much about, like, she's not obligated, but as in if you're parenting a child alongside the husband, it wouldn't really make sense that, you know, whenever they're with the father, they eat in a sukkah, but when they're with the mother, like, they're just not, like, you don't have to have them sit in. So, like, some things are just going to, because of the mitzvahs of, like, the fact that they're raising kids together, you're going to have to go along with some of the, like, chinuch things that are going on. Otherwise, like, the chinuch is going to be ineffective. Like, you're not going to have opportunities to, like, educate the kids if there's always, you know, some kind of difference going on between the father and mother.
You know, we talked in Parsha Shir last week about the chinuch of Yaakov and Esau a little bit. We didn't talk about it so much, but it's a part of the Parsha. So I saw that there's a famous vort, and we have to be very careful with talking about the avos and assessing their behavior, but there is a discussion in Mefarshim about how Yaakov and Esau were raised and whether there was anything that maybe led to the divergence of behavior. And there is a often quoted idea from Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch that they should not have treated both children the same way. So I saw that by Josh Hoffman, Zichrono Livracha, in his essays on the Parsha, so he thought there was a different idea, that maybe the problem was that Yitzchak and Rivka raised them with different ideas. Because essentially Yitzchak believed in Esav, and Rivka didn't really believe in Esav and only believed that he had the potential to have descendants down the line that could be worthy. So therefore there was mixed messages in how he was being raised, and that's going to Mimela give a problematic chinuch. And he quoted from the book Off the Derech how when parents send mixed messages, then the child ends up not taking either of their messages. They also say that that's a shot in why Ben Sarah Mora, among the unique conditions for Ben Sarah Mora, is that it has to be that the parents speak in the same voice, which is kind of unlikely. But it's symbolic, perhaps, of the idea that they have to speak in the same voice as far as the message. So I hear your point, but I'm going to have to also say, like it says to Yisrael, what questions does that answer? Because if we want to say, okay, that's why she's obligated to sukkah per se, because you can't have, say, a father teaching the kids to sit in the sukkah and the mother saying, no, don't worry about it with me, you don't have to do that. But it, I don't know if it actually fits our sugyas, if it actually...
you could say it's not a direct chiyuv on her, but it's an extension of her chiyuv, like either the fact that she's married, like an extension of the father's chiyuv onto her just because of the mitzvahs of like the fact that they're both raising...
Okay, so what you might be answering then is, okay, on the one hand, the Gemara, let's say, Nazir, Tos Yishanim, says women are not obligated, but here we see that she's expected to be playing a role, so maybe that's because she can't undermine the message of chinuch that her anonymous husband is providing agave sukkah. It's interesting. Let's try to deal with the question more fundamentally. What about the other side of the question? Why should the woman be pater? Why should the mother be pater? What's the nature of this deal? Harrison?
You say it's a mitzvah that says she's not grandma?
Can you?
Would it work if you said that?
Well, explain to me how it is.
Because there's a certain gap in the time that a person, a kid would fall in the category of like requiring cleanup.
Oh, that's quite as one grandma. That's interesting. All your hands are going up in response to that, or you have other suggestions? Because if you're responding, so then you're up first. I mean, if you're, you're also going to say that. That's fascinating. That's quite a Zman Grama. I don't know if you have another Zman Grama that goes on for years.
That was the question of Ken.
Right, no, I hear that. Usually Zman Gramas are days and not nights, or certain days, or certain times of the day. The idea that it could be all day and all night for years is a little harder to understand. You want to comment about that?
Can you just say that the Zman Grama is whatever the mitzvah the kid is doing, if it's like a that's Zman Grama mitzvah?
Oh, so that's tempting to say, right? And what's even more tempting to say, you don't even have to necessarily tie it to a Zman Gramitude, but you can also say, you could have also said, were it to have worked with anything, you could have said that mitzvos that women are not chayavos in, they shouldn't have a chiyuv chinuch. And mitzvah, is that what you're going to say?
Yes.
So, that what you're going to say?
No.
Okay, I'm listening.
I was just going to say the mixed messages thing, that could be a reason why they're not obligated, because you're supposed to like be doing chinuch, but you see that the mother isn't like performing the mitzvot that she's...
So that's consistent with this idea, right? So we could say, like, there's a lot of logic perhaps, or we could begin to see the logic behind saying that maybe chinuch should only apply if you are chayiv in it yourself. Right? So... if you have an obligation to do the mitzvah, you have an obligation to be mechanech your kid. Now, that has a lot of appeal because it could apply in other cases as well. For example, there is a prominent shita in the Achronim that says that's true about that the prohibition to enable somebody else to do an avera only applies if you yourself are subject to that aveira. It's the view of the Amuna Shmuel, who you've probably never heard of, but I say it's prominent because it's quoted in the side of the page of the Shulchan Aruch, and it's a topic of a lot of discussion. So sometimes it's a kind of general question you could ask, a mitzvah, maybe like chinuch or like with Ne'iver, is that a mitzvah of its own to the Mechanech people? Or is it an extension of every mitzvah? You're obligated in this mitzvah, and you're obligated to teach your children to do this mitzvah, etc., etc. And then, yes, you could say very appealing svaras in it about whether you can be effective with the message if you're not doing it yourself or the like. And there is even a daya that says that by the parallel concept that we have here of not feeding ketanim isurim, that there is such an idea. What's the problem, though, before we go further? It's not going to line up with our sugyas, right? Because here we're talking about in sukkah, where women are pturos. And the Gemara, which says women mefarish are not included, that's talking about nazir. Are women shayach to mitzvah of nazir?
Yeah,
how do you know? Pasuk, very good. You can get into Rosh Hashanah's kol, right? So it's yidua that one of the questions Rosh Hashanah asks, guys who fly to his kolo, I have a slight role in making this yidua because we used to joke about it all the time in the Purim Spiel. So the constant repeated line in the Purim Spiel. So that Rav Shechter would ask, can a woman be a nazir? And the wrong answer is to say no. The half wrong answer is to say yes, it's a Mishnah. And the really right answer is to say yes, the Pasuk. Pasuk says, Ish o Isha, ki azir nazir l'haf. It's pretty explicit. So, yes, so women are subject to the mitzvah of nazir. So the Gemara, which says ha'ish v'lo ha'isha, is in the context of nazir. So it's a little hard. And the Tos Yishanim, what's that talking about? What brought that into the discussion? Why is it Maseches Yuma? What's going on over there? Right, it's doing something in that Masechta. Why is the comment there in the 8th parak of Yuma? It's talking about Yuma. You're fasting on Yom Kippur, right? So women are obligated to fast on Yom Kippur. So unfortunately, as appealing logically as it is, it doesn't line up with really almost any of our sources. So it could have been a very good svara, but first and foremost, we have to fit what the context is, and it doesn't seem to do that. Hi.
I might be.
Go for it.
Last year, I think it was in Mount Gabriel when we talked about a woman being that she doesn't actually have teaching Talmud Torah because she doesn't actually have in Talmud Torah. Could that be something that would, I mean, that seems to seem like be the same idea that we're talking about now in terms of like that's kind of explicit in the sense that she doesn't have a chiyuv to teach because she doesn't have a chiyuv to learn.
Okay, so that actually has a little bit more of a possible hope for us. I assume what you're saying, if I understand you correctly, is you're not saying, oh, just like there's the same idea, she doesn't have to do it herself, therefore she doesn't have to teach it, because that's what we just said doesn't work for our cases. But I think you're saying something more specific. Right? So what's the difference between what we just said doesn't work and what you're saying now?
I think
there is one.
The logic seems similar in the sense that they kind of like work together, that if she had a chiyuv in it, so then she would have a responsibility to teach it, but since they both like don't work, as in like she doesn't have a responsibility to teach it because she doesn't have a responsibility to learn as well, I guess that it would line up a little bit with
so just make clear what you're saying. You're saying that this obligation of chinuch is tied into the obligation of Talmud Torah.
I mean, it just seems like there could be some parallel in if not like directly with involved in the actual like, you know, comparing the Talmud Torah to the chinuch aspect, but at least like in the sense that you see this parallel between, you know, the what she's responsible for versus like what she has to, like what her obligation would be to, you know, teach someone.
But I think it's better to take it with the Talmud Torah part of it. I think that does seem to give us something. Because again, the actual mitzvos, we don't see a lining up. It seems the mitzvos where she is responsible, that's where we're told no chinuch. And the mitzvah where she's not responsible, that's where, like this one, like sukkah, where we do find the discussion of chinuch. But what if we say, more generally, that it has to do with Talmud Torah? Because we have to figure out, in general, where does chinuch really come from? So if chinuch is connected to the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, maybe we could say, and this is something we'll have to see if the facts end up supporting, but what if the mitzvah of chinuch is a prat in the mitzvah of Talmud Torah? Do you see a way to say that? What does one have to do with the other? Sorry?
Teaching Torah.
Okay. Yeah, say it better.
It's the same thing.
Okay, same word.
Talmud Torah, you're teaching them the mitzvahs, or you're teaching them the Torah, whatever. You know, because you're teaching them how to do the mitzvahs.
All right, so it's teaching the Torah din d'oraisa or din d'rabbanan? Din
d'oraisa?
Yeah, presumably, right? V'shinanta m'vanecha. So, where does this chinuch that we're talking about fit in? Moshe, do you want to comment? Did I make up the other hand before?
What?
Did you have a hand up before?
No, I was going to mention
Akiva. I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, maybe what's going on here is that Talmud Torah has to do with preaching, not necessarily with practicing. But there is a direct connection between the preaching and the practicing. So, therefore, it makes sense that, at least on a Derabbanan level, within the broader heading of teaching the mitzvos, we also say, you know what? Give them homework. Right? Don't just teach them about sukkah. Then at Torah, you have to teach your children about the mitzvah of sukkah. And with Derabbanan, you have to sit them down in the sukkah. That's appealing somewhat, right? Yes.
Also, like the laws that we said, the reason why Talmud Torah is greater than the mitzvahs, not only do you do one mitzvah of learning Torah, but you also leads to doing all of the mitzvahs.
Oh, okay. So that's
a very strong connection between actually.
Very good. Okay, so that's important to highlight also, right? The extent to which Talmud Torah requires practice, or you could say to which Talmud Torah is undermined by a lack of practice. You know, one of the major sugyas that we'll get to, God willing, in Sukkah, so much wonderful stuff ahead of us though, one of the major, and you could spend all year on beautiful sugyas in Sukkah, and we talk about Sukkah very little, so many general sugyas that talk about a lot of things, but one of the, they all pass through Sukkah. So one of the sugyas that's, God willing, very much in our agenda is the sugya of osik b'mitzvah patam in a mitzvah. If somebody is involved in one mitzvah, he's exempt from doing another mitzvah. But there's a major, glaring exception to that rule. And that is the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. That somebody who's learning Torah is not exempt from doing other mitzvahs. So that's pretty glaring, because we put tremendous emphasis on the value of Talmud Torah. So to say that it's so important, and yet this is the one mitzvah that doesn't exempt you from other mitzvahs, that's very surprising. So there are a couple of explanations to that, but one explanation is that you can't make the case that you're teaching Torah successfully when that Torah, or you're learning successfully, let's say in that case, that Limud HaTorah is going to prevent you from doing mitzvos. There's something fundamentally impossible about that as far as the goal of learning. So too, we could say that the goal of learning, the idea that you're going to teach your child about sukkah, but when it's possible to sit him down in the sukkah, you're not going to do it. There's something missing there. So let's keep that avenue open, because it's appealing on a couple of levels. First of all, right now I think it's really the front runner to explain why you would not include the woman. Right? Because on what level, hashkafically, we know that we place tremendous importance on the role of a mother in raising Jewish children. So the notion that the Isha is not chayeves in chinuch in this sense, first of all, we have to assume it's lowercase ches, because to say the mother doesn't play a crucial role in the upbringing of Jewish children is a very challenging idea. So presumably we're talking about a very specific mitzvah, lowercase ches chinuch. And even that we need to explain. Right? What's the svara to exclude the mother from that mitzvah? Which, I have to emphasize, is not clear that it's the case. Right? We have conflicting sources on this point. So, but assuming that the sources that point us in that direction have any validity, we need to understand what that would be. And so far, this is the front runner. Hi, remind me your name, sir.
Danielle.
Yes, good name. I think I remember that. Yes.
Is it possible that specifically because she is so involved in the chinuch, she doesn't have a specific chinuch, as opposed to the father, who could be much more involved in his own personal affairs, and therefore would have less involvement in the chinuch of the child, and therefore he has a specific mitzvah to make sure that he gets it done?
Childbirth.
What about childbirth?
Women don't have a chiyuv to have children.
Right, so why do they have a chiyuv to have children?
They have any desire to have children anyway. It's like maybe more so than the man, and therefore the man has the chiyuv, the woman has the desire, and therefore it works out. But it could be that.
Okay, it could be that. Netzach Chachma explains that has to do with anguish. It's too physically painful in Darachei Noam, so they don't have a mitzvah that's going to obligate the mother to go through pain, even though she's obviously an indispensable, crucial part of the process, and presumably gets a mitzvah for doing so, but as a chiyuv, it's not something that we can obligate. So is there a parallel svara here? To figure it out.
Jewish education could be a pain on the mother if she's independent.
Okay.
Bris Mila.
What about Bris Mila?
Painful, but it's not a chiyuv on the child. It's a chiyuv on the father.
Not yet.
We said it ultimately becomes a chiyuv on the child.
It's only not a chiyuv on the child.
So that's your kasha on the derechad.
Yeah, ultimately.
Okay, so that's the kasha on the meshach achmor.
Wasn't meshach achmor because the mortality rate of child of women like in child was so high that it would actually be pikuach nefesh, and therefore, like Bris Mila is like it's not as bad, it's not as dangerous as that she's giving to children, and therefore that's
okay.
It would be a chiyuv on women because it'd be committing to put their lives in danger.
Okay, could be. It's along the lines of what he says. Could be. So, these are possibilities. I think so far the strongest way to explain, and again, I want to emphasize that we're not saying that this is absolutely true. But to the extent that there are makoros that point us in the direction that say the Isha is not chayevis in the chinuch, that perhaps has to do with the fact that it's a prat in Talmud Torah, and Talmud Torah they're peturusin. Why are they peturusin in Talmud Torah? Because they're peturusin in Limra Torah, they don't have to learn the Torah for themselves, therefore they don't have to teach. Now, why is that Torah there? That's another interesting question. This is only so many steps back we're going to go. But maybe there's a relationship with that. So, in any event, this question is important to us for a lot of reasons. It's important to us to figure out the whole role of the Isha. But also, this question about whether it's somehow connected to the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is important because, especially coming off of our previous sugya, as we develop this sugya, we want to understand saying chinuch is a mitzvah derabbanan. What does that mean to us? What type of mitzvah derabbanan is it? What category is it in? I think somebody asked us the first day, is it a siyag? Is it something else? So how exactly does it work? That's something we're also going to want to figure out. So to say that it's a component of Talmud Torah, that gives a little more substance to the idea. Yes, Harris. Okay, a hechshem mitzvah for Talmud Torah or for mitzvos? Yes. Question is, then what's the role of that? So, is there a mitzvah derabbanan to do a hechshem mitzvah? You could just say that it's simply logical. In which case, then it's ratz and Hashem. See, it's interesting. Let's ask it the other way. If we know that most of the dinim drabanan that we have, say, fall into the category of a siyag, so is there any way to call chinuch a siyag?
Makes sense.
Sorry?
If you want to say it's a siyag, you can make sure that the Jewish culture survives, because if you don't teach them, then they're not going to learn anything.
Okay. So education is a siyag, so to speak. You know, it's kind of a roundabout way of saying a siyag, but let's say, okay. You know, yes, Daniel?
You don't teach them and they become a mitzvah.
Okay. All right, so let's say a little more specifically. I think that works a little better. Right? So say not just about all of Klal Yisrael, which we care about deeply, but say about this individual child. Right? So what are the chances that this child is going to turn 12 or 13, respectively, and boom, right away, be able to turn on mitzvahs that they never did before. And so presumably you need some, and you could also arguably say that for a 13-year-old boy to start doing mitzvahs on his 13th birthday is harder than the 7-year-old boy doing it for the first time. Because he's reached this age of 13 without this being a part of his routine. That's a negative chinuch. So, this is an important question to keep in mind. What derabanan, what kind of a derabanan is chinuch? Is chinuch there just to prevent a situation where you're going to have this highly challenging reality that a child becomes chayiv in mitzvos and has no experience with a mitzvah? Is that it? Or is there more or less to it? That's also something that we have to figure out. So the notion that it could be a prat in Talmud Torah, that's appealing to us because that gives us a category to put it in, and also theoretically could explain the role of the father specifically in contrast to the mother. So that's a possibility to think about. You know, when I was in high school, I remember that the reshiva of Shalvim at the time was Rav Meir Schlesinger, and he was going, or I remember hearing from him maybe more than once at that time, a shir that he was saying that chinuch is a mitzvah d'rabbanan, but clearly there is a mitzvah min haTorah of chinuch also, right? The mitzvah of chinuch min haTorah is v'shinantam levanecha, and that takes on a different character. What's the character of that mitzvah? That mitzvah is about raising religious children. So So the idea that this is more similar to what Yisrael was saying a minute ago, the idea that you should infuse the tradition of the religion on the next generation, that's the mitzvah minat Torah. And the idea of very detailed specifics, okay, make sure your child benches, make sure he takes a lulav, etc., etc., so that is a din d'rabban. But he noted, and I think he quoted Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach as saying this, as agreeing with this point. I think he said, mentioned this to Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who agreed with it, that theoretically you could have a conflict between the two. How would you have a conflict between the two? Let's say, for example, your child is 11, 12 years old, is in a rebellious stage, and you're going to insist that they bench every word perfectly all the time. And by doing so, you're going to push them farther away if you're going to be too heavy-handed about it. So theoretically, it could be that the long-term goal of raising religious children may be threatened by the Drabanan component of insisting on the performance of mitzvahs. I've always, always astounded at Rav Schechter's range of knowledge, since I remember hearing this Dvar Torah from Rav Schlesinger when I was in high school, and then I came here in college and was in Rav Schechter's shir, and then heard him quote one day in shir that Meir Schlesinger had this idea. I don't know where he heard it from, but I don't think he was applying to yeshiva at the same time. But in any event, so he quoted the same idea from him. So that's just interesting because of pitting the two against each other. But it could be more than that. It could be that one is the source of the other, that the Rabbanan flows from the Deraisa as a detail of the Shinat Lumanecha. Gilad, what did you want to say?
As you said,
you're going to create an Iver, essentially.
Yes.
Right? It's like super lefne Iver.
It's adding this, like derisive aspect to it.
Yeah, you may understand it's like super lefne Iver. Right, lifnei iver is you shouldn't trip up a blind person. Here you are blinding the person. You're creating the scenario where they don't know what to do. So it could be. So yes, as well.
Can we reuse the shinat l'manecha? Why isn't the pain of now a deraisa?
So presumably it is a deraisa, that the idea of raising a from child is for sure a deraisa. The question is, does that really require that when the child is 10 years old that you insist that he take a lulav? Not necessarily. Theoretically, you could raise from children maybe without doing that every time. But the mitzvah of chinuch d'rabbanan that we're talking about, which we've been calling lowercase ches, even though it's our sugya, but the lowercase ches is that you should make sure to train them specifically in the act of mitzvahs. But theoretically, being so makbid on everyone might get you into a scenario where you're going to alienate the child, so then, okay, you find yourself in conflict between the two. Can you think of any other possible sources for chinuch as a goal? Why else it might be? Is there any other theme it may fit into? Why, what about that first day in Tosfos that it's a mitzvah on the asays and not on the los asays? How could you understand that? It's a difficult idea, right? Let's see.
Also from Shema, the Ahavta Hashem Elokecha.
Okay.
Should be putting a sense of love for the mitzvah into the child.
Mm-hmm.
And asays are kind of the...
Asays are connected to Ahavta, that's how we feel.
Instead
of smacking their hand when they're doing something wrong, you're kind of positively motivating them when they're doing something right, or having them do things that are more positive oriented. Okay, I hear that chiluk in general, but then you have to say that chinuch is only about Ahava, which is that we need. I think there's a step missing there to say that that one goes to the other. I mean, it's interesting. It's a very like modern idea, right? Mm-hmm. To say that all the positives we want you to do, and we're not going to put any negatives. But that, in essence, that's a contradiction of our previous sugya. We're talking about Shemi Avirenu. Right? Remember, we said that we have to be careful that perhaps the overall concern of Chazal was that people would think, okay, positive mitzvahs is everything, and it's Docha Shabbos completely, etc., etc. That maybe that's why Chazal Davka said, not only is Lulav not Docha Shabbos, but we only are not only a shofar not Docha Shabbos, we're not even going to let you blow shofar to Lulav on Shabbos at all. So you should respect that boundary. So it's interesting to say that we're so afraid of any negative messages that we're only going to focus on that. Ariel?
We brought this pasuk by Rosh Sasser about Shal Avicha Yagetcha. Mm-hmm. You actually have the word Shal, like that you should see, like, tell you what to do.
Because that could be a source for chinuch.
In general, I think so. I
mean, okay. Shal Avicha Yagetcha. So that's very interesting. Okay. And especially that's considered to be possibly connected to Ner Chanukah. Okay, who's up first over here?
I think if you were to comment down.
Doesn't even necessarily be when it's average. You just say practically that if you a little kid, if you teach him the mitzvah, say he'll like the local mitzvahs and just practically he'll do them. And if you teach him the lotzah, say and you hit his hand every time he's doing bad, it's not that you know we're only going to teach him like instead of average. It's just that practically speaking, he's not. It's not going to end up well for him in the future. He's going to rebel against the lotzah.
It's a very interesting idea. Like saying that if we're saying that all of this drabbanan is supposed to support the mitzvahs haTorah of v'shinantam levanecha, so what will support? Okay, so if we give them opportunities to see mitzvahs and to love the mitzvahs, so then that will draw them into a religious lifestyle. While if we focus them on all the things they can't do, that's not necessarily going to, even though that's clearly a part of it. So when we say they were training them in mitzvos, we don't mean necessarily they were training them in the specifics of mitzvos, but that we are training them in the beauty of a Jewish lifestyle. And then ultimately that comes with a package of all the mitzvos. Okay, you go.
Kind of on their point, a little bit more like just fundamentally, you, in order to train someone, like, you know, against those essays, you'd have to incorporate some kind of punishment in it, since they wouldn't be chayav in any kind of punishment. Like, you know, if you can't really explain, like, how to, you know, these are those essays, but, like, by the way, there's no punishment for them because, like, you're just not going to be able to teach them, like, the, you know, how a punishment would work, because they would never be chayav in that at that stage, as opposed to an essay where you can just say, like, this is just something you should be doing. I think the Lose essay just without that aspect of punishment, because they're not chayav, like they wouldn't be chayav in any punishment, you can't really like properly educate them on as to how to like, you know, not do a Lose essay.
Very interesting. So that somehow corresponds to the idea that the punishment is an inherent part of the Aveira, negative consequences is an inherent part of the Aveira, and they can't Yishayach, the negative consequences.
Right.
But maybe the positive milos of the mitzvah that they could be shayach to. Okay, Israel?
This would be sort of using Mishinat and Levanat also, that if, again, the concept of Mishinat and Levanat is that you should bring up a religious child.
Mm-hmm.
And the way we as Jews are identified as Jews by the things that we do,
mm-hmm.
which would fall under the mitzvah sase category, not things that we refrain from doing. Which
okay. So that is very interesting. So I was going to say, and this one of these is one of the sources that was on today, so we haven't gotten through everything, you wouldn't necessarily have gotten to this. But you could mention, say, two sources, one Rishon and one Achron, that draw a distinction between assays and los assays in favor of assays in ways that may contribute to understanding this. So one, if you saw today, you don't get to see the Tosfos and Bava Kamma that was on today's list. Okay, so hopefully you'll see that tomorrow, because this actually relates in a couple ways. But there is an opinion in the Gemara and Bava Kamma. We actually talked about it at some length last year. For those of you who were here last year, we were learning Kiddushin. We talked about this at some length. That the Gemara has an opinion that says Suma is pater from mitzvos. A person who is blind is exempt from mitzvos. That's Rabbi Yehuda. we happen not to paskin like that opinion. When I first found that out, that was a big surprise to me, because there's such an extensive literature about it in the Rishonim and the Achronim that it becomes a surprise to see that all of this discussion is around an opinion that is not accepted the halacha. But that seems to be the case, that the Yehuda's view is assumed as pater for mitzvos, and we don't hold like that, but there is, nonetheless, a very extensive discussion. So part of the discussion that you find in the Rishonim and the Achronim, Tosfosim, there's the Yehuda, there's Kiv Eger, there's a lot who write about this. So if you say, like Rabbi Yehuda, that a blind person assumed was pater for mitzvos, would that mean pater for mitzvos completely? So for various reasons, they find that hard to believe. And there are some statements that mitigate that, say, no, it can't be pater completely. So what distinctions do you find? Well, some say, first of all, they have to decide at least like a ben Noach, presumably. Others suggest that maybe they would be chayiv on a level derabbanan, which has certain complexities about it. Maybe we'll get to that. But there is a view in Rishonim that they're chayiv in aseis and not los aseis. So that would parallel this. What would the idea be there? So what it seems, this is how it's explained, even though this svara is a little challenging. Who said the opposite?
I said I think the opposite.
Yeah, why would you think the opposite?
Because, I mean, obviously the fact that they're blind limits them to certain things, that activities that they'd be able to participate. It makes it much more difficult to participate in certain activities. So we're not going to make them go. It's kind of like the chan and the doing.
The which?
The active. We're not going to make them go out and be active. Well, that's kind of define us. We're not going to make them we're not going to make them like actively go out and do mitzvahs, but certain mitzvahs which are like those asses we'd be assuming are more chamor possibly.
Okay.
And have a more serious, so we're not going to just allow them to just violate.
You're saying there's less need for it based on the condition.
No.
Saying that,
what do you mean
saying that the condition of the blindness makes it harder to fulfill.
Yeah, but also, and also those are more serious.
And also, so basically the trade-off works less in that direction. You could hear that, but there's another reason why I also would have thought this thing should be that way, even based on the svara that's used to explain the assay preference, that the notion is that whether or not you are technically obligated in the details of the Torah, we want that Jewish people should be perceived as Jewish. So the notion of a Jewish person who is not subject to any of the responsibilities of a Jewish person is troubling. There's not going to be any way to identify this person as a member of the Jewish people through their behavior. So that therefore could lead to a desire to say that even if you're not whoever we're talking to, Asuma Kutney or whoever, that even if this individual is not technically obligated in mitzvot, but nonetheless we have to ensure Jewish identification, and therefore at least mitzvot asay we're going to obligate them. Now that has a plus and a minus as far as our ability to understand it. What's the logic there to say assays for that reason and not los assays? Because, yes, Jacob?
Mario was saying it's the active identification, meaning if I see someone taking a lulav, it's a pretty good indication you're Jewish. If I see someone not doing that ayo, it's not really giving me any indication as to.
Right, that's basically the idea, that when you don't see somebody doing an Avera, so we have no idea why they're not doing an Avera. Maybe they're just not interested in the Avera. It's not for, it's just not possible for them. So that's not going to give us any identification that you're dealing with a Jewish person. But if they're doing something, if they're doing a mitzvah, Okay, so then that does it. That gives us this introduction. So if that's the idea, so then perhaps that's what's going on here. That maybe chinuch is in the same vein. That when we want to have a child do mitzvahs, maybe it's not necessarily as a preparation for the future. But a Jewish child should identify as Jewish. And just like an adult who might be exempt from mitzvahs, we still want him to identify as Jewish through doing Jewish things. So too, a katan should have such an obligation. So that is something that some of the achronim considered. Is that really what chinuch is about? Maybe it's not necessarily about training in mitzvos as much as it's about creating this Jewish identification even now. And maybe that could explain this position, which isn't the position that we really adopted the halacha. And that could be the svara. Although to say we haven't adopted the halacha, it's not so easy to ascertain whether we have or whether we haven't. Because we're going to see that we have a parallel idea that a parent is not allowed to, certainly to feed the child prohibited substances. You're not allowed to give your child non-kosher food. And the discussion, as we've alluded to, about whether it's simply that you're not allowed to feed non-kosher food to your child, or if you have an obligation to stop him from eating the non-kosher food. So, bottom line, there are details where it's going to make a difference, but it's hard to know. We know that one way or another, you're not going to have your child do aveiros. So the question of, is it because of the mitzvah of chinuch, or is it for other halachic reasons, that could get a little blurred. So whether this first day in Tosfos, does it have any role in halacha, that gets a little bit hard to ascertain from practice, because bottom line, it's going to look very similar one way or another. But in any event, maybe that Tosfos about Suma can give us some clue why there could be a distinction between Aseis and Los Aseis. But if that's the issue, then it sounds like that's taking us in a different direction as far as what this mitzvah is about. Now, another distinction just to be aware of that may also support this notion to some degree is the Gur Aryeh. We may have mentioned this the other day, I don't remember. The Gur Aryeh was written by the Maharal of Prague. This is commentary to Rashi and Chumash. So the Gur Aryeh has a suggestion which parallels other things and which was connected to this past week's parsha. This past week's parsha told us we did Shvi this week, which we had been doing Rishon. So the end of the first Aliyah says, Eikav Asher Shama Bakoli, that Avram listened to my voice. And the Gemara says from here that Avram, of us we assume in general, kept all the mitzvahs of the Torah before they were given. So the Gur Aryeh understands that was only a reference to positive mitzvahs and not to los aseis. So perhaps there's some support here also to saying that even without a tzivui, there is a notion of adopting the mitzvahs aseis and not the mitzvahs los aseis. All right, so any questions about any of that so far? Okay, so there's still a lot more in this whole sugya. It's just a very sprawling sugya. But there's a major, major part that we have to get up to now, so maybe it's best we'll pick up from this point tomorrow. But what we have to figure out, this is going to become a major linchpin of things. So we talk about there's a mitzvah of chinuch, the Rabbanan, for a child to do mitzvos. But who exactly has this mitzvah? Setting aside the question of the role of the mother, but does this create a chiyuv on the child? Or is there some problem with saying that? And are we to assume rather that the chiyuv is on the father? And what are the implications of that? So that, God willing, we will pick up with tomorrow, just to recap the main points. So we discussed today these various possibilities in whether the mother is chayiv or not. The sources are not 100% clear, but we tried to figure out why would it be that she wouldn't be chayiv. We had some svaras that were appealing but didn't really fit the makoros as we have them. What was most appealing was to say that this is all under the heading of the Shinatam Levanecha, and that there we find an exclusion of women from the Chiyuv Talmud Torah, and that if we say this is a part of the Chiyuv Talmud Torah, which we can explain in different ways, that has a certain appeal to it. And we discussed a little bit the whole notion of the Daraisa and the Darabanan possibly being in conflict with each other, possibly supporting each other, and the like. And then we try to figure out also this distinction between assays and los assays, whether or not we accept that distinction in the halacha, but it was the first of the statements in the Tosfos Shanim. And we discussed various ways to understand that. There were some very creative suggestions about why assays would support the goal of Shinatam Levanecha or of other components. And then we noted that this distinction between assays and los assays can be found in other contexts in some earlier svarim. Among them, perhaps most relevant to us, Tosfos and Bava Kamma talking about a summa, so that Jewish identity should be maintained even without a chiyuv. And if that's the case, maybe that gives us a whole other possible model of what chinuch is meant to accomplish. And then we mentioned also just now this notion of the Maharal and the Gur Aryeh, that the Avos, when they took on the Torah, they took on the mitzvah saseh specifically. Among the mitzvahs that the Avos took on and patterned for us is that Yitzchak taught us about mincha. So who would like to follow up his lead? Okay, as well, you seem like you're in the mood. All right, Asher Yishev Eisacha, Oja Alucha Sala, Shkeha Om, Shkacha Le'asher Om, Shkacha Le'asher Om, Hara Mimcha, Lohoi Hamela, Bavar HaShem, Lastly, the Nerfi,